lovers, welcome to Get Real, a podcast hosted by the National Animal Interest Alliance, through which we'll have deeply honest conversations about animal research so we can learn together and make compassionate choices about our medical future together. Welcome to episode 24 of Get Real. I'm Dr. Cindy Buckmaster, your host for Get Real. And today, we're going to speak truth to power and call on the research community to get with the times and do their life-saving work, well, better. Our partners at Transnetics have developed tools that are available right now that make our work with animals less wasteful and more meaningful. We'll learn about some of them from Bob Bean and Jesse Janicek today on Get Real. Good morning, Bob and Jesse. Welcome to Get Real. For our listeners, just so you're aware, I am today with Bob Bean, who is the president and CEO of Transnetics, and Jesse Janicek, who is VP of Global Sales for Transnetics. And these folks are so insanely busy that the only time we could meet, literally, for this recording, to bring this information to you, is 5 o'clock in the morning, Central Time. They agreed to this. In fact, they suggested it. That's how crazy they are. So I'm grateful to you both for making time, and I'm really excited about today's episode because we're going to talk about something that is incredibly near and dear to my heart that I have a lot of passion about, and I know that you two have a lot of passion about it as well, which is why you're here today. So just by way of reminder for our listeners, we met with Jennifer Caesar, who spoke a lot about some of the issues we have in maintaining mouse colonies, which leads to a ton of waste of these beautiful lives. And that was horrifying for all of us. You know, basically, we do a lot of mouse breeding because we study genetics in mice, and I went through this, but we manipulate the genes in mice because we can model health and disease in people that way because we have analogous genes. And then what we have to do in order to make sure that the manipulation we made is what we're looking for to model that disease or that particular condition, we do something called genotyping, where we evaluate the genetic composition of the animal to see if we got what we wanted. And then we have to do a lot of breeding of these mice so that we have enough animals with that particular manipulation that'll allow us to study them and get some statistically valid findings from them. The end result of that is that people breed a lot of mice, and they're not right-sizing it. They just breed and breed and breed and breed, and you know, mice make babies every 21 days, and they breed too many. And we end up with all of these mice, and it happens everywhere, all over the world, and then every day, thousands of mice are killed for no reason. They're not animals that go into studies. They're just euthanized because somebody didn't understand how to do this in an effective way and right-size it so that they're not making so many more animals than they need. So Jennifer mentioned that there was a digital solution to this. She said there were several. And the reason we're here today is because there is one in particular that I think is one of the most revolutionary tools I've ever heard of in my entire career of lab animal science that can take care of this for you in ways that none of the others can. So I'm going to ask Bob Bean, who is the president and CEO of Transnetics, is a true entrepreneur, and I want him to tell us a little bit about this new tool, what it's called, what it stands for. Just take us through the story, Bob, of how it came to be.
Well, good morning, Cindy. I'm grateful to be here, really grateful for Get Real and the mission that it has. We are big fans of your work, cheerleaders for you in the industry. You have a voice that only you can bring. The combination of your love for animals and your deep love for science and discovery make you such a unique person. I've told you before that I think you're one of the great evangelists for this mission, and I am so grateful to have you. So thank you for giving us a chance to talk on this podcast. The software that you're referring to is an evolutionary discovery that came about after many years of work. Her name is Amy, A-M-I. We call her Amy because she functions like a person that works in your lab or works in your breeding colony, works in your animal facility, but it stands for Artificial Mouse Intelligence. And I think it's important to qualify her and say that the reason that she's here is because the complexity of what people are trying to do is so overwhelming. In many cases, these wrongful outcomes that we end up with when it comes to the number of mice are there because it is a complex problem in one strain. It can be an overwhelming management problem if you're running multiple strains of mice. That is how we got here. And I think you can also add that for some people in laboratories, they didn't know what they were doing. They weren't taught animal husbandry. It's not their background. They're neuroscientists or they're immunologists or developmental biologists or whatever they are. That's their trade. Breeding and husbandry might not be. And yet, because of the way we do animal husbandry in America, the labs are primarily driving that. Then we have people downstairs making decisions in animal facilities that they're really not qualified to make. And it's really complicated and can get out of control in a hurry. So I think that's how she got here. And the evolution of her really started with an attempt to sell more genotyping. We're a genotyping company. That's what we started the company to do.
And so maybe you can just explain that briefly, because there are a lot of folks listening who aren't in lab animal research.
So as you said, you have this outcome that you're looking for. You need a certain number of animals that have this gene that you've manipulated to cause the mutation. And what happens with you and me is we pick up one copy of our mom, one copy of our dad. And so that makes us us. And that is the way mice inherit as well, as you can imagine. So you often have to breed animals to get to the condition you want. Let's say you want it in a heterozygote state, which is one copy. When you have 10 little pups that come from this litter, somebody has to figure out which one of those pups got zero copies, which one's got one copy, and which one's got two copies. And that is all we do. We basically do a who's your daddy testing or sort of inheritance testing for all these little pups. And I think that's a load on the lab. That's how we started the business, thinking about the load of work on a laboratory just to do that test at every litter of animals. And we said, dang, that's like a blood test for a doctor. Doctors know how to do CBCs, but they don't do CBCs every day because they just need the answer. They just need to know what was in the CBC so they can treat the patient. So it is with animals and genotyping. You just need to know which animals to put into which study and which ones that you don't need in the study. That's where our business was born. So genotyping, or servicing these laboratories and animal facilities by doing that test for them, allows them to figure out how to organize the animals for the purpose of the study. And we got into these conversations about who's cheaper, as you can imagine. I tell people there are three reasons people don't use this for genotyping. The first one is price, the second one is price, and the third one is price. Because really nobody wants to do genotyping, but everybody that breeds animals like this has to do genotyping. Then when you add that the person who's going to do this test is going to take 4 or 5 weeks to get around to it, which is really common, I said, gee whiz, if we could only capture those costs, because there's real cost to the lab of time that gets wasted. So a few years ago, I'm in a meeting in Europe, listening to some customers talk among themselves, and this guy pulls out this laptop, and he's got this cage rack and all of these things on this Mac. And I said, where'd you get that? And he said, well, I wrote this software for our lab. And I said, can you put the cost of the cages, the per diems, can you put that into the software? And could you count time? And he said, sure. And so he showed me how he would do that. And I said, what are you going to do when you graduate? And he said, I don't know. I was thinking about actually starting a software business to do this. And I said, I'll tell you what, if you come back to America and you decide you want to do that, I'd like to sit down and talk to you about making that happen. All of it. For the sole purpose of capturing cost to help us sell more genotyping. So he did come back to America, finished his PhD, Cambridge, came back here, and we began a pilgrimage down that road. Now, we learned a whole lot about software and how to do it and what the user needs and what labs need. There's a big difference in what a breeding facility and an animal technician might need and what a laboratory might need. And I think we built a tool that was too blended. It had too much in it. And so we learned a lot. It got rebuilt over time into what was called Colony. And in that, we brought in a couple of colony breeding experts who helped us in that rebuild of that software. And along that path, we began to realize, well, wait a minute, if we know the molecular genetics of what they're trying to accomplish, if we knew the outcome of what they wanted, what their actual need was scientifically, we should be able to apply artificial intelligence to that and not just kind of in the background know, but actually direct it. Like tell the system what you want, and then it will set all of that up. It will put your breeding pairs together. It will show you when to retire your breeder. It will tell you how you can consolidate cages. It can give you statistical power in being able to project and manage the actual breeding for the scientific purpose that you define. you get to follow sort of a script over dozens and dozens of strains of animals. And when you come in every day, you can just look at the thing and it knows where you need to go. It tells you what to do and guides what all the science has agreed needs to happen. It just simply organizes and guides the behavior. And that's how Amy was born. She came into the world trying to combine the molecular genetics and the application of scientific need together into a manageable task system.
Listen, as a previous director of one of these large programs, I can tell you without doubt that it's really hard for these folks to even remember to go down and check on these things. And there's so many things to check on, and you mentioned a lot of them, right? They have to be weaned. We have to know which litters are producing well, which litters are not producing well. Should we recombine? Should we take, you know, there's all of this stuff to think about. They can't think about it all. And if there are 30 or 40 lines and they're responsible for even, let's say, 5 each, they can't do it. And so no wonder the place is crawling with mice and then they just get euthanized for no reason. And so what you're saying, though, is that you don't have to think about it. Tell Amy what you want. Plug it in. Do. And then she's going to start sending you alerts. It's cloud-based. You can go on. You can give me all the details, right? But she'll tell you what to do next for every single cage. Is that right, Jesse?
That's exactly right. It's pretty incredible. You know, I never thought I'd be the person who would be at an organization as long as I've been here. But Bob developed this place with, I mean, a very, very clear mission on what we were trying to do. And it's really to serve researchers and help them get to discovery faster. And what's incredible is simultaneously what we care very deeply about is just better animal welfare. You know, when I first joined the organization and what we were focusing on was automated genotyping, what I came to understand is that genotyping wasn't the science. The answers we got from the genotyping were of vital importance to the researchers that we were serving. And artificial mouse intelligence, or Amy, she's just a continuation of that journey for us. Why do we have all of these laboratories globally and technicians spending time literally with Excel spreadsheets down a table trying to figure out how many animals we need to breed, why, when, how, when we can plug it in? You know, I've got an 8-year-old son who's smarter than I will ever be, who has to do math homework, and he's got to do it by hand. And of course, I'm standing here going, well, can't I just plug it into a calculator, just like Amy? Because that's where we are in this world, right? We really want to just provide these tools to get folks the answers that they need to do good science. And I think the three of us know, I think a lot of your listeners here know, that there's a lot of noise in our community about animal work right now. And it hurts my heart, right? And some of it's true. Too many animals are being bred. We need to shut down animal research. This is wasteful. This isn't kind. And Bob and I are really, and our whole organization is sitting here saying, yeah, actually, we hear you. But animal research is needed. So we're going to give you these tools you need to do things the right way. It's just of such vital importance.
I don't mince words usually on these episodes about this. If we're not doing that, we're not being responsible with taxpayer money, and we're not being ethical, right? What people want, you know, none of us like the fact that animals are still necessary for us to have these treatments and cures that we all ask for every single day, right? It's not going away. The need is there. We don't like it, but we want to know that what comes from these animals is meaningful, that their lives are valuable and they mean something, and that they're not being wasted, right? So in addition to the fact that we're wasting a lot of animals, when you allow, frankly, a bunch of grad students and postdocs to be in charge of these things, which they don't have a lot of training in, well, then the quality of the data that comes from these animals is also questionable, right? You know, when they're doing their own genotyping, for example, we know that those are questionable results because I've seen countless examples of lab folks having to just, well, I got to bring more mice now and I got to do it all over, right? And why are we doing that? And then if you're a patient waiting for that treatment to cure, you're wondering why on earth is everybody wasting your time? Your time is limited. Everybody needs to get on the same page and get it right.
And I think one of the reasons that we got here, Cindy, is if you look at the history of how molecular genetics in mice evolved, it came from purebred Swiss mice being used in research around nuclear technology for the United States Navy in the 50s and 60s, and then moved into general mice being used in basic toxicology to see what would happen if you gave an animal this drug. And then this radical thing happened, this ability to put a foreign gene into the genome of a mouse. And it went a long time. And the genotyping load on that was really simple. There wasn't much to it. It didn't require a lot of organization. And a lot of scientists who are in their 60s now began working in very simple animal strategies back in the 80s and the 90s. So their experience with molecular genetics was plus minus, yes or no. They had it or they didn't have it, right? And so you developed this culture of almost how hard could it be mentality. Well, what happened along the way was by 1995, when Dr. Capecchi figured out how to target that mutation or delete a specific gene and insert a foreign gene, which he won the Nobel Prize for, there was a lab at MIT, one of the godfathers of cancer research up there, Dr. Tyler Jacks. Dr. Jacks had a triple knockout in 2001 when we were starting this business. So he had already had six different tests that he had to run on that animal just to figure out which combination to use in his studies. That was 2001, and it's gotten even more elegant since then. But with that elegance came a ton of diagnostics and management, and the industry is just now catching up. Amy is probably 10 years late to the party to really help people. And part of our mission, what Jess and I are spending our time doing, is showing people the opportunity not to have to do this and, candidly, to be able to price her at a point where people can use it. She's like hiring a very small part-time associate, and she never takes family leave. She always shows up on holidays. She works every day. She never gives you any trouble, and she's going to be a member of your team doing this work behind the scenes and making your job easier.
He's exactly right. And one of the greatest joys in my position here at TransEdics is exactly what Bob said. I spend a lot of time with laboratories globally, engaging in studies, showing them the efficiencies that can truly be gained by combining artificial mouse intelligence and colony by TransEdics with our automated genotyping platform. And that time component he was talking about is vital. In every single laboratory that I have served, we are saving months of time. We are eliminating multiple lines where laboratories for years thought that they had something that they didn't in fact have, right? The gene or genes of interest are just not there. And by simply opening up communication and visibility with these tools in laboratories, we're totally revolutionizing the way laboratories are getting things done. And culturally, not to hit a hot spot here, but there are labs that I go in where, you know, I'll speak to PIs who I respect very much, who say, well, I had to learn this. I had to learn how to do genotyping myself. I had to do colony management. I used a notebook. Okay, well, I could cut my own hair, but I don't. Let's move on. What I really want to try and do is get that idea forward that genotyping and colony management isn't the science. The data we produce is absolutely needed for great discovery, but let's move past the hazing. It's not needed. We've got technology to let labs do great things. So many students, lab managers, postdocs that I have met who have come up to me at the term of these studies where, you know, we've convinced their bosses to let them work with TransEdics, or we've convinced their leadership to invest in these tools that will let better, more responsible science get done. And it was just thanked me. I mean, genuinely thanked me for taking them off the bench, for letting them genuinely dedicate their life to science, and for preventing them from honestly walking away from this world that they love so much.
It reminds me of a young man that was at an institution on the West Coast. He was there as a lab technician in an internship and had gradually worked his way into a part-time job while he's going to school down at a university in Southern California. And when we showed up to sell genotyping, this is back while Jesse was probably in diapers when I was crawling around down there.
You know what? When you were talking about the history of science, I was biting my tongue to not make age jokes, but go ahead.
I know. It's going, yeah. It's kind of just out there at this point.
I've given up. Yeah, my coffee's kicked in.
It's 5 o'clock. Yeah.
Given up on the trying to hide the fact that I've been around since predatory dinosaurs roamed the earth. And so I did a presentation on genotyping. And when I met him, we were sort of onboarding him. His lab had decided to use us. And I went back for a visit a few months later and he told me this story. He said that when he first heard what I was going to be doing by helping them outsource their genotyping, that he really believed that was the end of his job, because that's what he did for the lab. And they told him, hey, we want you to put the samples in this little kit. They're going to mail off and this is going to be done for us now. We don't have to do it in the lab. 4 months later, when I got back to visit them, he said that fear was real. And after he did that for them a few times, they came up to him and said, hey, now that you don't have to mess with this, we've got some behavioral studies over here that we want you to work on. And this kid was so excited about those behavioral studies because it was so much more interesting than this repetitive, miserable task of genotyping these samples. And I will tell you, a year later, when I saw him, we had a little social event there, he came up to me and told me that he was so engaged by this that they had offered him full-time work. He was finishing his degree and now was going to go get his PhD in immunology because this is exactly what he wants to do with the rest of his life. Propelling into the behavioral studies gave him this excitement and drive to stay in science and to do something with his life. It was very encouraging to me because that's exactly what we want to see happen. Look, everybody has to do tasks in our world, in our life, that we've always done one way, and then technology comes along and allows us to use our time more efficiently. When people develop the calculator, Jesse's talking about doing math by hand, the calculator was hated by people. They all said, no one will ever do any math anymore because we got this calculator and I used to do my math on a piece of paper. Yes, you did. That's correct. And now you just simply do the math, and now we're doing much higher math because we have tools that have allowed us to do faster, more elegant math. And computers went through the same transition. No one will ever be able to think. No, we think a lot more now than we did before because we're not doing so many repetitive things. So it's a normal pushback, but we're excited about the future because we see the light bulbs come on when they see the data, and we know that we're winning at that moment.
It occurs to me, and Jesse, I'm sure you can speak to this because you're out and about all over the world watching these things directly, right? We're coming out of a pandemic, and all I keep hearing from everybody in Lab Animal, the directors and everyone else, is we can't get enough people. At the same time, the institution's recruiting more and more researchers, so they're going to be more and more animals and fewer people. And, you know, how are we going to manage this?
Every institution, I have yet to interact with any institutions in 2023 that have not said, Jess, we're struggling. We don't have enough people. We can't make enough hires. And I immediately say, well, hold on. Let me talk to you about artificial mouse intelligence. She's going to take a lot of that manual guesswork off your plate. And by the way, help you scale your programs, which everyone's desperate to do, to accommodate all of this new work. You know, what I hear a lot is, but I am Amy. And I want to be really clear that any individual who has dedicated their lives to animal welfare and the betterment of science, they're far and above Amy. They're a human being with a heart and a soul, but artificial mouse intelligence just lets them get their job done faster and better and lets them scale. You know, time and time again, every single study that I've gotten to engage in, we're watching the number of experimental animals double. I'm telling you consistently, Bob, tell me if I'm wrong here. There is not one study that I have emailed over you to say, hey, look at this amazing ride I've been on for the past 3 months. Doubling the number of experimental animals, but importantly, also eliminating unnecessary waste. We're seeing it everywhere.
Yep. And she's right. And I think that the thing we want to also make sure people understand is the value of the human being in these breeding facilities is not to be scorekeeping. The value of the human beings in the breeding facility is to be the consultant liaison to the laboratory, helping the labs understand how they can do the strategies that they want to do, using these software tools to guide that planning, and then managing those relationships from the animal facility up to the lab. And if we can do that more effectively, we will keep the laboratory in the lab doing their research and let the animal husbandry staff be the animal husbandry staff. Because if we could get that to happen, wow, that's the best and highest use of the staff of people that say, well, Amy is my job. No, your job is really much, much bigger than scorekeeping. Let the tool do the scorekeeping. You manage the relationships and all the dynamics that go on between labs and animal husbandry. That's where we consider it to be ultimate nirvana, is if the postdoc doesn't have to come into the animal facility anymore because all of this is communicated through this software and there's a breeding consultant down there that's guiding those relationships, or multiple breeding consultants, we win. Science wins. Everybody wins. We'll do better science with fewer animals if we can do that.
And with fewer people, which addresses directly the short staffing issue, which is not going away. Okay, Jess, again, you're out in the field, right? What are the major impacts that you've seen directly? What's really changed? What are the biggest impacts on science from the use of Amy relative to what things were like before?
If I could answer really with the human component behind this, because this is the thing that gets me up and gets me really working every day, it's the number of conversations that that I've had with folks who have literally said that the combination of AIMEE and automated genotyping have revolutionized their lives. We used to have this t-shirt, Cindy, it said PCR, pipette, cry, repeat. It's a good giggle, but it's so right. Most recently, I worked with a wonderful lab. I won't say where or who, but I really hope that they're listening right now. And their lab manager was incredible and came to us and said, you know, this was my first job as a lab manager. I was really excited. And then I came in and I realized that my entire job was going to be genotyping and managing this colony. And I can't stay on top of it. And I know I'm not doing a good job. This was a guy who cared. So flash forward, we've completed this study and he's thriving. The laboratory has been able to double the number of publications that they anticipated being able to put out. He is no longer stuck behind the bench. He's actually acting as a leader, right? He's doing these things that fill his cup. So that has been a major game changer. I've been with the organization again for a while, and I had already mentioned to you that there are PIs who believe that things need to be done the old school way. But the number of phone calls or emails that I get from folks who say, hey, I don't know if you remember me. You know, I met you 10 years ago at Baylor, and I'm my own PI now, and I'm working with Transnetics because there is no other way. I mean, that's such joy for me. I don't know anybody in my life whose like family hasn't been touched by cancer. And seeing these young, motivated PIs who want to do things the right way so that they can produce more science for the betterment of humankind, that's incredible. That for me, Cindy, I think that's the greatest win for me personally and the greatest change that I've seen in the landscape of animal research. You know, again, in all of these studies, just seeing double the number of animals in footprints, double the number of experiments, the amount of time that saved. We have all of these studies. There's a lab that came to us that said we are saving them like 2 months of time per strain that they're working with. And if that doesn't resonate for all researchers, just know this. That means that they're making discoveries faster. I think that a challenge that we have when communicating what our entire world is about is the why behind it. And what I want people to remember is that there aren't any cures without animal science. So if I can be part of this incredible organization that puts these tools out there, that gets us to discovery faster, that's a life well lived for me.
And you'll spread the opportunity to do better science faster all over the world.
Yep.
And that is what you're about, right?
That's right.
It is.
Yeah. Well, you two are just incredible to me. I mean, I love you both very much. It is really difficult to find someone who really gets it and who feels so strongly about the things that, you know, that I know that you feel so strongly about and I certainly feel so strongly about, right? These animals are beautiful, they are living heroes, and they mean so much to the way we live our lives. And what comes from them should really be meaningful, and we should do our best to make that happen. And that's going to change human lives as well, which is why we're all doing this, right? So before we close, and again, I thank you so much for getting up at this insane hour. Because it was the only time we could find to get together so that we could share this information with our listeners. But before we close, if you have any comments, anything else you want to say to our listeners, that'd be amazing.
We know that animal research has had and continues to have a bad rap, but it is just simply for our well-being. And it really should never, ever, ever be taken away. The medications my kids are taking right now because they're sick. My friend whose mother has cancer and is enjoying the last year of her life. All of these things are happening right now only because of this work. But we do recognize as an organization that, you know, it may not be being done the right way. And our mission is to change that.
I'm going to take a different approach here. Cindy, if you edit this out, I'm coming for you. I just want to really thank you for the mission that you're on. You have been not only an inspiration to me, but you've been an inspiration to this industry and the people that work in this industry for many, many years. And when we had the opportunity to have you join us in a capacity as an advisor and a consultant side by side with us in this, we never, ever expected or wanted even a moment like today. There was never any intent for us to be on a podcast or talk about our products or anything like that. It was because we wanted to throw as much energy at you to get you into as many places to talk about the power of the work that people are doing and help stabilize this mission from a perspective that none of us could do. You have this really unique voice, and I'm so proud of the work that you've done. I'm so proud of Get Real and the number of lives that it's impacting. We see your impact on this industry, and we know that the world is a better place because of the work that you're doing. It is not easy. A lot of people take shots at you, and a lot of people, even in the industry, don't understand exactly what it is that you're trying to do sometimes. But man, we are big fans of you, and we're big fans of this broadcast. And thank you for giving us the opportunity today, because it's awesome to be on here, but it's more awesome to be a listener and listen to all the stories that you've been able to weave together to help people understand more broadly the powerful work that medical research and diagnostics have for the world. So thanks for that.
Wow. Thank you, Bob. I really appreciate that. I love you guys.
We love you too.
Right back at you.
All right. Well, get on with your day. I mean, I don't know what the hell you're still doing here sitting around. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. Get busy.
Get busy.
You got lives to change. Got a world to fix. All right. You guys have a fantastic day. And I love and appreciate you. And we'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye.
To paraphrase Jesse, the medications my kids are taking right now because they're sick. My friend, whose mother has cancer but is able to enjoy more time with her. There are no treatments or cures without animal research, but it's not being done the best way possible. And our mission is to change that. That, my dear listeners, is stronger science, faster cures, and fewer animals in action. And every single service that Transnetics has developed is designed for this purpose. You can check them all out on the episode response page of our website at getrealpodcast.info. And while you're there, please click on the support link and commit to a small monthly donation. Seriously, I need your help to keep Get Real rolling. We still have so much to talk about, and I appreciate your engagement. I'm Dr. Cindy Buckmaster, your host for Get Real, and I thank you for joining us today. Up next, sex discrimination and rare diseases. We'll talk soon.